What is up, guys? So before we start the show today, I want to take a little bit of time to tell you about something I hold very near and dear to my heart, and that is Social X. Social X is a community of entrepreneurs working together to make a positive impact on the world, scale their businesses, make more money, and build their networks with like-minded individuals. They teach entrepreneurs how to go from zero to six figures, and their weekly mastermind calls feature top business moguls and entrepreneurs from various industries. They have online courses, they have amazing entrepreneur events all over the country, and much, much more. Now, if you're interested in learning more about Social X, go ahead and go to socialxmastermind.com. And let them know you came from this podcast. And, you know, I really genuinely believe you should join this mastermind because honestly, without it, this podcast would not exist. So go ahead, come join me within the Social X Mastermind. And let's go ahead and get on with the show. All right. What is up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of the Young, Healthy, and Wealthy Show. Today, I have another elite entrepreneur on the show. He is the president of Sticky Branding. He is the author of Sticky Branding and Brand New Name. He is a speaker, consultant, and helps other companies grow their businesses and their brands. Without further ado, please help me welcome Jeremy Miller. Mr. Miller, how are you doing today?
I'm awesome. Thanks for having me on, Chase.
Pleasure having you on the show. So for those of you who do not know who you are, Mr. Miller, why don't you go ahead and tell us a little bit about who you are and what really pushed you into this entrepreneurial journey that you're on?
Sure. Well, first things first, you got to call me Jeremy because this Mr. thing's not going to work. But I started my entrepreneurial journey 15 years ago. I was actually working in a large software company, but my dream growing up is I wanted to join my family business. And my parents said to me, you know what, if that's the case, you got to have a university education, you have to work in the real world for 4 years, and you got to apply for a job. I'm like, what? But I actually had to apply. There's like no lucky sperms are getting in here. And so 4 years to the day I joined the family business, and that was really the start of being an owner, being in charge of my own destiny and setting things forward. And it's been a crazy ride. Three businesses in the midst of that, worked with lots of clients around the world, as you said, written a couple books. And I think that's the neatest thing is when you are an entrepreneur, you get to set out and be whatever you want to be.
Absolutely. So what really pushed you to be an entrepreneur? Because I mean, you could have just gone to school, applied for a job, and then stayed at a job for the next 40 years, like most people do. I mean, what was it that really pushed you to make something of yourself outside of that?
Well, growing up in an entrepreneurial family business, that's all I knew. So I remember there's a moment in like when I was in high school, I went to my parents, when I grew up, I want to take over the family business. And they're like, holy crap, no, that's odd. So they went and they talked to their friends, and that's where those criteria came from. Their friends said, look, if your kid wants to come into the business, they have to set criteria for success and criteria to join the business. And so working in the real world was great. Now, my brother, he had the same criteria. He's gone on and he's an executive in a large software company. So he never went that entrepreneurial thing. But I think I just grew up and that was what I wanted. And when I tasted it, I couldn't look back. And it's, and as you know, like the entrepreneurial life is manic. It's every time you have those highs, there's a low right around the corner. So that roller coaster, that addiction, whatever it is, there's that broken gene that says, you know what, I like that. And so that's kept the fuel going.
Right. So what was that family business? What was it that you were trying to take over?
It was an IT staffing company. So that was actually my foray into branding. So I came in as the director of sales in around 2004. And it was an IT staffing company in Toronto where I'm based. And the company had been around for a long time, but we didn't know it at the time, but the recruiting industry was going through a technological disruption. So if you go back to that moment in time, Google was 5 years old. Facebook was less than a year old. LinkedIn was 2 years old. So they were already changing the way people went and found jobs. And so that first year I had my ass handed to me as a sales guy. It got so bad that we used to have pit time where me and my sales team would have scheduled time, 6 hours a week, smiling and dialing, doing cold calls, trying to drum up business. And it was awful. It was just a freaking grind. And so at the end of that first year, I sat down with my parents. I said, if this is what it's like to be in a family business, I'm out. This is garbage. And my dad said to me, this is advice I hold on to this day, which is, it's not about the business you've built. It's about the business you're building. What are we going to build next? And it was on that alone, that what's, it's not about the business you've built, it's the business you're building. What are you going to build next? It was that that gave me this moment to take a pause and look at the company. And we stepped back and we looked at our business and we looked at our market. What we realized was our business didn't stand out. When you went online, when you looked at Google, and remember, this is really old Google, we look like everybody else. And so being a sales guy who had lost his competitive advantage, I started consuming everything I could get my hands on. You look behind me, I've got a bookshelf full of branding books. Oh, yeah. I'm reading all of them, and they're all about big companies. They're all about Apple and Nike and Starbucks. And I'm like, okay, this is fine, but I'm a little company. I have a marketing budget, not a vast one. I can't go and put Super Bowl ads up. So what do I do? And so we started pioneering digital marketing really, really early on. And I rebranded the family business, and where my whole practice and everything, my origin story started, was my clients took notice of what we were doing. They saw what we were doing in content marketing and search engine optimization. And we did, this was even before it was called inbound marketing. Like, shit, I'm an old guy right now. But it was, we were pioneering all this stuff, and these large companies started taking notice of it and saying, okay, hey, Jeremy, what are you doing there? Can you help us? And it was moments like that as an entrepreneur, you have a choice. You can listen and respond to a client, or you can keep doing what you're doing. And so I listened, and in doing that, it just kind of kept setting me off on this journey.
That's perfect. That's one of the keys to there as well, is like, you have to listen to what your customers want. Because I mean, you can't just like throw something out there and expect them to want it. They have to want it first, and then you give them what they need.
Yeah. So what if they don't know it, then you just got to market the hell of it until they realize they need it.
Perfect. So you really kind of took all of this marketing. Now, you know, from what I've seen from social media and from being connected, like, branding's your big niche.
Yep.
Branding's a big thing. What was it about branding that really stuck out to you amongst everything else?
It happened organically. So as you can tell, I don't have a traditional path into marketing. I didn't come from an ad agency. I didn't study this in university or college. I was an entrepreneur that was pushed into this. And so, but the defining line, the through line that goes through everything. So I started out in the CRM industry. I was providing tech software technology to improve sales performance. Then when I rebranded my family business, we created a sales and marketing recruiting agency. So that was providing talent for sales. How do we get the best salespeople to improve sales performance? The consulting that came out of that, when the client demand, created a Salesforce design consulting business. So how do we feed a Salesforce? And it's all been along this line of, how do we improve sales performance? And the most effective way to grow a business is through the brand. If somebody clearly understands who you are, if somebody can clearly see what makes you unique, they're going to be much more likely to buy. So the most effective way to drive sales is branding.
Gotcha. So what are those, what are some of those key aspects that you really have to look for when it comes to, you know, say you're starting your company and you really want to build that brand? What are those key aspects in the beginning to build that foundation to really push you forward?
Well, I think the most important one, it's the first principle of my first book, Sticky Branding, is simple clarity, which is the ability to describe who you are, what you do, and who you serve simply, succinctly, and in the language of your clients. And the way I would think of this is, elevator pitches are actually bad advice. They're catchy, they're colorful. But the better way to think of it is, make your brand Googleable. So if somebody were to search for it online, would they be able to find you? And that, what Google's actually trained us is how to think now. So if you can make your brand Googleable, you're going to make it more memorable. It's also going to clarify the key questions. Where do you play? How do you win? Who do you serve? And so it's in that sense. Are you an accountant? Are you a financial services person? Are you, in your case, your specialization is in fitness? It's the definition of what category are you in, what kind of services do you deliver, and then when would somebody call you? And if you can distill that down into a simple short phrase, then that's, I think, the foundation of any small business.
That was, I hope all of you listening right now heard that. That is super powerful. Something I didn't learn for like years, for sure, when it came to like building my podcast and my brand as well. So
when you got it, what happened?
What was that?
When you got it, what happened?
It's just easy. Now, I know I actually just got back from an event in Puerto Rico, mm-hmm. and, you know, building the brand of Young, Healthy, and Wealthy for my business, for my podcast and my brand. know, people saw me like, oh, you're Young Healthy Wealthy podcast. Oh, you're Young Healthy Wealthy like trainer. I'm like, yeah, I am. You're right. Yeah. So it's like, that's the thing. So when it comes to being Googleable, I know it's a word that's thrown around and, you know, it's something that's very commonplace and easy to understand for you. But for somebody who's just starting out, what exactly does that mean to become Googleable? Because you can really Google anything.
Right. So think of it in terms of categorization. So the reason why I don't like elevator pitches is that's trying to find that catchy, pithy thing that gets someone to go, oh, that's interesting. Tell me more. But what's interesting when you describe the young, wealthy, healthy podcast, you look at that description there, you've defined your target market. So it's, and you're asked, and your aspirations. It's for young professionals who are young and wealthy, or people who want to be wealthy and healthy. So in doing that, you're setting out your description, and you're also saying it's a podcast. So you're putting in your category. So the short answer is answer three questions. You are. So what are you? What is your business? What is your category? You do. So what are your services? How do you actually help someone? And you serve. Who are your clients? And if you think of this in marketing terms, what that is that's your category. So positioning, your services. So what you do, and your target market. And so think of just three bullet points. You are, you do, you serve. And if you can get that, then you'll be able to get it down into more catchy language. But the first thing first is, what's the bullet? And the way you know you've got it is when you say it to somebody, they don't ask you any questions. They go, okay, cool. And then the conversation keeps going. And then they talk about how, or they tell about why, or they don't go, huh, can you tell me more? Like, you don't want that. You want someone to go, got it. Now I know what you are. It's like a label on a file folder in their mind.
Boom. This is hasn't even been 10 minutes and it's so much value right here. Like, this is stuff that literally I've had to read tons and tons of books to learn and understand. You guys listen to this episode right now, you're getting so much value at this point. So, okay, let's say you've answered those three questions or three bullet points. What's the next step after that when it comes to branding and developing the name of the company?
Well, in developing a name, we'll take the assumption that you have a name at that point, but say you don't. And so say you're at the very beginning stage, or maybe you're not happy with your name and you need to rename it. And this has been one of my challenges. So in my family business story, when I joined the company, it was called Miller & Associates. And when we realized that we had a branding problem, is Miller & Associates a law firm? Is it an accounting firm? Is it a dentist? Is it a recruiting firm? Like, no one could tell. So the first thing that I did was I changed the company name, and we changed it from Miller & Associates to Leap Job. And we tried to create that fun, evocative brand experience on that. And the benefit of a name, I think your name is the most important brand or marketing asset that you can ever create. So if you're going to spend time or money on anything, it's not a website, it's not business cards, it's not logo, it's your name. Because the name is the longest living artifact of any business.
Huh.
Think of it.
Yeah.
Ford, 1907. Zipper is going back to like 1800 and something. Like the common words, laundromat, escalator, zipper. These are all are names that are well over 100 years, and they don't change. But even in a business, what you want to try and do is find a name that represents who you are, and then own that, because your website probably only has a shelf life of 2 to 4 years. Your business cards, you throw them away, and nobody actually cares. So we spend all this time on other things, but spend the time on your name, because that's the one thing that's going to stick around forever.
I didn't really think about that. Thinking about like all the different brands who have even rebranded and just had different logos or different messages, but the name always stayed the same. I know, you know, Staples just changed their logo not too long ago. Apple's changed their logo tons of times.
Yeah.
I mean, you name it. That's crazy. I never even thought about it that way.
But the name doesn't change though. Like the words that we use, and that's actually how we think and communicate. So the last 15 or 20 years, we've all got these screen addictions. But if you go back 100 years, we communicated through language, through speaking, like where we largely came from a storytelling society, and then the printing press comes around and then blah, blah, blah. But the way technology is taking us now is back to voice. The fastest growing category of search right now is voice assistants, Siri, Alexa, all those type of things. So Even though Apple changes its logo or Coca-Cola runs a new campaign or anything else, you still know the name. Like, I know you as Chase, you know me as Jeremy. And even if you don't see anything, that name is what you will actually remember. And that becomes a vessel. All the experiences, all that product knowledge, everything you know about what that is gets associated to the name. And but we overlook this topic. Like, you see how nerdy and geeky I'm getting on it, but it's something that is the most fundamental part of your brand.
Right. So when it comes to building that name out, because I know there's a lot of brands, you know, like Apple, for example. Apple, it's not necessarily because it's a tech company, but it's an app. It's named after a fruit. So like, where does all of this kind of tie in to be able to build that name that stands out, but still is able to resonate with their audience?
Well, I think that comes down to strategy. So, my new book, Brand New Name, is a branding playbook on how to name things. And in it, I talk about the three types or three categories of names. So you can have a descriptive name, a suggestive name, or an abstract name. An abstract name is an empty vessel. So Apple, what does that have to do with consumer electronics? Nothing, but they have breathed life into it. The same thing with Verizon or Kodak or Hulu. These are names that are just words, and sometimes they're invented words like Hulu or Yahoo, and sometimes they are taken from somewhere else like Caterpillar or Apple. But large companies will often use them because they can just make the name the brand. Starbucks is an example. Starbucks is named after the first mate in Moby Dick. He never drank a cup of coffee once in the book. But the name now is intrinsically associated with coffee.
That's wild. I didn't even know that.
And it's funny, back in the day, like going back to like the 80s, when they were a young company, you used to say Starbucks is named after the coffee-loving first mate in Moby Dick. And the Herman Melville Society, which is a bunch of dudes that love Moby Dick, I guess, were like, no, that never happened. So they actually called him out and prevented the company from saying that anymore.
Really? Wow. But I mean, at that point, it was already, you know, too late because now it's blown up into a huge coffee brand.
Yes, well, even then, it wasn't a huge coffee brand, but it didn't matter. It was an empty vessel.
Right.
So that's an abstract word. A suggestive word gives you an indication of what it's like. So you could have Twitter or Slack. They give you an indication of what the platform is like. So Twitter is like tweeting birds, and that's kind of what the communication style is like. Or Slack is, it creates space for your team. It creates Slack in your team. So it gives you an indication of that. Descriptive names are telling you what you get. And so your name, for example, for your podcast is a descriptive name. It tells you what the podcast is going to be about. And you can have totally fun and interesting names, no matter what kind of name it is. One of my favorites is a descriptive name, but it's called Big Ass Fans. I'm assuming
Yes.
they make big ass fans, right? Now, they started as HVLS Fan Company, which stands for High Volume, Low Speed Fans. So these are like 9 foot diameter fans. You'll see them in industrial complexes, or if you go to like Disney World or World of Coca-Cola or any of those kind of places above the ticket aisles outside where it's hot, they'll be running them above people, and they're great. They cool down people, they're quiet, and they look nice. But and they when they were originally started as HVLS, customers kept calling them and goes, "Are you the guys that sell those big ass fans?" And after a while, the owners took notice of this, and they said, "Yeah, we're those guys that make big ass fans." And they put a donkey in their logo, and it grew into an iconic brand. So I think you can have a ton of fun of it, but it starts to go back to your original question: how do you get to that? Is strategy. What are you naming? What's it take to stand out? If you can define the criteria for success at the very start, then you can get really creative. And so that's the first stage in the book: build your strategy. And once you know what the criteria for success are, then you can find an awesome name.
Perfect. So when it comes to, I think you might have just answered that, but this next question, but when it comes to just figuring out what kind of name you want to use, which type of like, in what scenarios would you choose a different type of name? Because I mean, with the podcast, I have a descriptive name. With, you know, Apple, it's abstract. Like, how do you know which type of name is best for your brand?
You often don't know that till the end. So what I will say is, so you build your strategy, And then the second stage of the book is a 5-day naming sprint. And so over the course of 5 days, I give you a set of exercises so that you can come up with as many ideas as possible. But I'm going to encourage you to create abstract names, suggestive names, constructed like acronyms, descriptive names, like try to create as many different options as possible. And the reason you want to do that is at the start of this, you don't know what's going to work. Because the issue that you have is coming up with an interesting name isn't the hard part. It's finding an available name. You look at the number of podcasts being started every month. Now, in the podcast world is a perfect example. It's the same as the business world. What's Podfade average right now? Is it about 10 episodes is the average length of a podcast?
Pretty much, yeah.
So the graveyard of podcasts is insane and growing exponentially. But they all need names. So you go to iTunes and you go to find a great name and you're like, oh, wait, someone else did it and it's already dead. And so that name is off the list for you. So you have to come up with new names. We are seeing it now in domain names, app names, trademarks, they're all being consumed. So when you start this project, create as many options across all the different categories so that when you go to test, the first thing you want to do is eliminate the non-starter. So if someone else is using it, you can't use it. And after you've got through that, you don't necessarily know which one's going to be the one that goes, ah, that's perfect. And so if you give yourself lots of options, then you're more likely going to have that one at the end of the process. You go, that's it.
Boom. There we go. So what? I mean, this is such an interesting concept because I've never seen any sort of book or even piece of content talking about finding the right name. What was it that really stuck out to you about the name? Was it just the longevity of it and you just wanted to put something out about it? Or what was it about names that really stuck to you when it came to branding?
It's what you just said, actually.
Oh.
You've never found a piece of content on it. I'm the same way. So when I renamed my family business, I went and found whatever I could find, but there really wasn't much there. There's only before my book came out, there was only two other books on brand naming, and neither of them gave me the information that I needed to do it myself. And so there's this old meme that goes around the internet called How to Draw an Owl, a fun and simple guide for beginners. And it shows you how to do it in two steps. So step one, draw two circles, one for the head and one for the body. Step two, draw the rest of the damn owl.
Yeah. I've seen that.
It's horrible. But that was the naming guide. So like you want a brand name like Apple or Nike or Starbucks, and you want to have it be evocative like Virgin, and you're like, okay, cool, I see the destination. They're like, now go make your name. You're like, damn it.
Like
And
how?
it's yeah. And that how is missing. And so by running the sticky branding now for almost 10 years and doing lots of these projects, I recognize that process is the missing ingredient. It goes beyond naming. It's all areas of branding. And so what we're really trying to do as a business is answer the how and the do questions. There's enough big ideas out there. There's enough people telling you why you should do this stuff, but no one's answering how to draw a damn owl. And so what Brand New Name was trying to set out was, what is the actual proven process that anyone could do? Pick up the book and get a name, 2 to 4 weeks, no bullshit, just get it done. And that's really what I had set out to do.
That's perfect. I mean, that's a perfect niche is to be able to do the naming because, like you said, there's nothing out there. This is going to stand out for the test of time. Definitely going to be fantastic. If y'all are listening, you have to go get the book. Where can they find that book, by the way? We'll just go ahead and throw it in now instead of the end.
Anywhere books are sold, but Amazon's the easiest. It's called Brand New Name, and both an ebook and print. But get the print. It's if you haven't seen it, it's a graphically designed branding book. So if you are watching video, it's pictures all over the place. It shows you the process, and it's something you'll want to use and go back to.
Oh, absolutely. And is this something that, because you also have in your on your social media that you're a speaker and you're a consultant, is this what you go to consult brands with and go to speak about?
Well, still the core speaking topic is related to sticky branding. So yes, there is a keynote that is related to brand new name. And it's a ton of fun. But the core to that talk is on the subtext to the book, which is employee co-creation. And so I believe that you are creative. everyone inside your organization's creative, and inside every organization's immense creative potential. And the way we solve complex problems like naming isn't by hiring a consultant in an agency, it's by unlocking the creative genius of the people around us. And so that's what the brand new name keynote really focuses on. But I go around the world more fundamentally and talk around the topics of sticky branding. How do you grow a brand where people know you, like you, trust you, and ultimately choose you first? And I think that's really what branding is. I don't think branding's logo, tagline, colors, any of that kind of stuff. I think that's just wrapping paper. Branding is about that bond, that first choice connection. And any company of any size can do that. It's just a choice to build those fans, those relationships. And when you do that, it makes your life so much easier, because people like you, then they're not going to go goo and kick the tires and everything else. They're going to buy. And that's really what we wanted to have, right?
Oh, absolutely. So how do you get those people to like and choose your brand over anything?
Well, we go back to what we talked about earlier. So simple clarity and the ability to describe yourself simply and succinctly, I think, is the foundation. The second part of it is that relationship building component. And this is an ever-changing element. This is marketing strategy at its core, which is how do you build those connections? And the challenge that we have is, and we can see this happening very, very quickly, is the volume of noise going up on social is growing exponentially. And it's almost a race for the bottom, where I really don't believe inbound marketing is an effective strategy for many companies anymore, because organic search, while powerful, is what, 50% down the page, and all the pay-per-click ads are above it. And then when you go onto social, it's just a shouting match of people bombarding you with content. Moz came out with a piece of research going on about a year ago now, where they said over 55% of articles published on the internet have no likes, shares, or even views.
Wow.
Isn't that mind-melty?
That is wild.
But you could see this. When you go on to LinkedIn or Facebook, are you clicking the links or are you consuming in your feed? Most people are consuming in the feed now because it's so much content, and it's good content. We got videos and we got rich posts and things like that. But we got this bombardment of content now. So it's, content marketing is this race to the bottom. So what does all that mean from a likability factor? Well, if you think to the content you do consume, it's from people that are giving you value in some way. It could be humor, it could be educational, it could be something. So the podcasts that you keep in your phone are the ones that you appreciate. There's a ton of stuff out there you might look at once, but who is building that relationship? And then, so it's building a marketing strategy and a relationship strategy with who is my target audience. How do I connect with them? How do I create value with them? How do I build relationships with them? And I think where you're brilliant, Chase, is that you've gone beyond the pod fade thing, and it's the longevity that your fans are getting to know you. And the longer you do this, the more we get to know you, the more that's that likability. Then we just start to tune in. And so that becomes, so it's not the question of the shouting match, it's the question of the relationship. Who are those 1,000 true fans or 10,000 true fans that will tune in and consume everything that you say? But to do that, you're going to have to be creative. There's no one cookie cutter answer. Like if someone says, if you need to post 10 times per week per Instagram and do this number of memes and this number of quote images, that's BS. It's not like, you're going to have to ask the question, who is my audience? What do they want? How do I create value? How do I build those relationships? And then work it every single day.
Gotcha. Yeah, I feel like one of the biggest aspects of that, which I've kind of started to run into now for doing the podcast for 40-something episodes and content on Instagram for a while, is finding new ways to convey information, you know, unlocking that creative side is definitely a struggle. You know, how do you go about unlocking that creativity? I know you were saying you do that within the teams of the people you speak to, but how do you also do that as an individual or as a brand?
Well, it's part of it, if you're looking at your own self, is having that freedom to experiment. So if you're looking at your own Instagram feed and all you're running is the same editorial calendar every day, that's not creativity, that's just process. So taking a chance, setting a, so I think it's really a couple things. The first thing is noticing something. So taking a look at the trends, seeing what's going on in your feed, seeing what your customers are doing, and that could just be talking to people, but the first thing you want to do is notice something. Then it's about creating a hypothesis. What's your theory of what you want to affect or change? And so you create a hypothesis and you run an experiment. So say you're going to run this type of content on Instagram, or you're going to run a competition, or you're going to really start working those Instagram stories or whatever it is. That's just Instagram, but you could do this on any platform or in any way. But you notice something, create a hypothesis, test it, and if it works, then learn from that and codify it. If it doesn't work, keep going back and create another hypothesis. So you test it, find something that works, codify it. And once you've codified it, then you've got a process on that. And that ongoing piece of marketing is, don't assume something is going to work forever. So after you've codified it, just measure it. And so it's going to work for as long as it's going to work. And if it stops working, then you drop it and you hopefully have new stuff going on. But if you don't have that first step to notice things, then how are you going to experiment?
Boom. That was really good.
I don't know. I don't think creativity has to be complex. Is the like we associate creativity with our technical skills, so our ability to draw, paint, sing, those types of artistic skills. So if someone can't draw, they say, I'm not creative. And I don't think that's the case. Your ability to create ideas and solve problems is creativity. How you choose to use that is your art. And so you might use that in fitness and training people. You might use that in sport. You might use that in podcast development. You might use that in marketing. Whatever it is, your ability to notice a problem, create a hypothesis, test it, and build that into something, that's the ultimate act of entrepreneurship.
Definition right there. That was perfect. So what I mean, you have a very large passion behind branding. I can see all the books behind you. You know your stuff. What was the big why for like pushing through doing branding and marketing and really being your own boss at this point? What's the big why? What's the end goal?
Today? That's a great question. So I think a lot of it comes down to that owl meme. It's that how and do part of it. The thing that I see after doing this for a long time is the difference between a great consultant and an average one, or just an expert versus someone who's interested in it, is their ability to codify things. And so why the book Brand New Name exists is to take really proven process and bring it out so that anyone can do it. And so we can all admire things, but what we're really trying to do at Sticky Branding, and what fuels me, is how can I give other people the tools they need to be successful? And so it's no longer my ego gratification of what can I build, what kind of accomplishment I can get. I've done that. It's that reverse piece that where I get the most joy out of working with people is seeing them realize their dreams. And to do that at scale, I can do that as a consultant one-to-one. The problem with that is it's relatively expensive, and I can't take on very many clients. So it's a select few mid or large size organizations that can hire me. But if I want to do this at a larger scale, then it's like the book, it's speaking, it's other things. It's providing that process so that anyone can grow a remarkable brand. And if I can do that, then that's just great legacy.
Oh, I love that word, legacy. I love that word. That's a good word.
Let me review it versus the what's your purpose right now?
My purpose is so a lot of it is actually that legacy. I'm building a lot of this, not so that, you know, it's a learning process for me, but everybody who listens and follows along, they're learning along the way too. So everything I learn, they learn. Everything I build, they can build too. So it's leaving that kind of legacy, but it's also part of it is, so my dad's an entrepreneur too. And I kind of wish I would have seen like all the content from when he was building his companies back in the day. And I wish, you know, I would have could have seen my grandparents and what they've done and all of that. So it's kind of building that up to where my kids, my grandkids, my great great grandkids, whatever, they can look back and see everything I've done, and then they can replicate in their own life and, you know, realize their own potential through the content that I've created. So it's kind of like twofold. Mostly it's all encompassing is that legacy.
I love it. That's so incredible. And I actually like how you describe it too, Chase, because it's you're learning in public. And one of the things that is so hard is like you can look at things that you're really great at in life. So you can take, say, it's a sport or an activity. It's hard to unwind that expertise in hindsight. And so what you know, but how you got there gets lost. And so the documentation and development of that, I think, is really truly brilliant. So kudos to you on that.
I appreciate that. Thank you. So, what's the vision moving forward with sticky branding? And then, as you as an individual, what's the vision?
Continuing to build it out and scale. So the one of the it's those things we just talked about. It's that development of additional tools and programs that that empowers other people to grow their brands. We very much view or Sticky Branding as a company very much views it that what we're fighting against is that draw the damn owl type of content in the world. And so our job, if that's what we're fighting against, is to provide the tools, the process, and the platform so that other people can grow their brand successfully. And so being that I'm the president and the owner of the business, that business vision and my vision are very closely aligned. Now it goes beyond me when it goes into the company, but if I as an entrepreneur, what drives me beyond that is freedom. It's the freedom to work on ideas that I want to work on with the people I want to work with, take the time that I want, all that kind of stuff that it's not being in the grind of just trying to make a dollar. It's creating a business that you love that affords you the freedoms to do the things that you want to do when you want to do them.
I love that. That's awesome. So when it comes to building that out, being that entrepreneur, what do you think is a key quality or characteristic that someone, really needs or needs to portray and protrude and develop in order to kind of achieve that level of success?
You know, it's not glamorous, but it's resilience. I think the big obstacle I see with many entrepreneurs right now is just that instant gratification type of thing. And the problem with entrepreneurship and business building is it is an instant gratification. You grind, like I hate hustler porn or that hustle porn type of stuff where it's like rise and grind and all kind of stuff because you're going to burn out on that. But the reality is you do have to grind, but you have to put in time and effort and iterate and find creative solutions. And the only way you're going to do that is by working at it for a very long time. And so the most successful entrepreneurs are often the ones that have been going at it the longest. And you talked, if you were to talk to your dad or his generation of entrepreneurs, you'll often hear them say, I'm that 20-year overnight success, that they're ballers now. They're making fat stacks. Everyone looks at that. But they did this 20-year grind, making no money, living on their line of credit, just eating ramen noodles, basically. And then all of a sudden, they crush. And so there's like success isn't linear. It's this curve. You got to put in that effort. So the advice I have for anyone who's serious about building something is resilience. That personal drive, that personal purpose that's going to give you the time and energy, or it's going to give you the energy to give it time, is the most important. Elon Musk was in an interview and someone said, what's it like to be an entrepreneur? And he said, it's like staring out into the abyss while chewing glass. And that's pretty dramatic, but there is a degree of truth to that. Like you're looking into the unknown and you're taking crap every day. You see your friends that have real jobs and they're making way more money and paying off, putting money in their 401ks and doing all this stuff. And you're dumping all your money into your business, working 60, 80 hours a week. Why? Well, you've got that purpose and that drive to see it through. And then you hit that inflection point and it's fantastic. But nobody gets there without the time. So resilience, that would be the key thing.
I love that. Like you said, it's not sexy. Like I haven't heard that one a whole lot, but that's so key. And I know there's a lot of entrepreneurs. Actually, it's Andy Frisella that talks about it all the time. Oh, my overnight success that slept in my store for like 10 years because he couldn't afford to go get a place. And it's like, it's the same thing. That is why I love that. So.
Yeah, and it's in the startup culture and the you look at social media, like that. that's the probably the most toxic thing to most of our psyche, because you see Gary Vaynerchuk and you see all these guys that are just crushing, and you go, why don't I have that? Put the phone down and focus on your client is probably the, and I'm as guilty of this as anyone else, but it's, yeah, like if you're serious about this thing, no one else is going to make you successful. So take ownership for it.
Take ownership. Ooh, I love that. That's good. All right, Mr. Miller, this has been an absolute pleasure to have you on the show today. I got one last question.
Shoot.
So let's say you were the one conducting this interview, right? And you
Yeah.
were interviewing Jeremy Miller. What would you ask?
As the final question here, great question. I should know better than this, because usually when I do these interviews, I ask, what question have I asked you before? You know what? The question I think I would ask is, can anyone grow a remarkable brand? And my answer to that is 100%. I think branding is a choice. That if you think of any remarkable brand, Apple, Nike, Starbucks, they all were built by people, smart, ambitious, creative people. But you don't have to be a big company. Your favorite restaurant that you visit on a regular basis, they have a sticky brand. The companies that you appreciate and know, whether they're small or large, they have a sticky brand. And so if you are passionate about what you're doing, make the choice to grow a remarkable brand, a sticky brand. And all that really means is to take pride in the work you do. If you read Steve Jobs' biography by Walter Isaacson, he tells a story of the craftsmanship of his that his father taught him, and that his father, when he made a fence or a cabinet, and he's a woodworking guy, used his hands, he would take care of the parts of of it that you couldn't see. So he would paint the inside and sand it and finish it, and all of it was treated with great care and craftsmanship. And so I think that's the same thing for you and I. It's let's be brilliant at the basics. Let's take pride in what we're doing, because if we take pride in it, it's going to show on the outside. And that, I think, is what is the true essence of great branding, is making the choice to grow a brand.
I love it. I love it. Beautiful advice. Thank you so much for that. If anybody wants to connect with you in any way whatsoever, how can they go about doing so?
You can find me on all the social networks at Sticky Branding. So Google Sticky Branding. If you want to chat, have any questions, anything, hit me up on any of them, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, etc. And the website is Sticky Branding. And once again, the books are up on Amazon. That's Brand New Name and Sticky Branding.
Boom. Y'all heard it. Go get that book. Go connect with them on social media. Go build your brand. And until next time, stay healthy, get wealthy. Boom. That was awesome. Appreciate
Thanks,
that,
brother.
Jeremy. I
Oh.
realized I said Mr. Miller like at the end there, but I was like, Jeremy,
It's all
all
right. I'm not gonna bust your chops on that. It's funny. So I had a friend of one of my friend's dads, you'd call him like Mr. Moynihan, and he'd say he'd call you asshole. And you're like, what? He's like, well, if you call me Mister, I'm calling you asshole.
right.
It's not
That's
Mister's
funny.
not my name, was his line. No, it's good. You ran a great interview. That's awesome. Did it get to what you were looking for?
Oh, that and more. Definitely. It was definitely very valuable stuff. I know it's because I'm still kind of in the branding phase of everything. I mean, I've had it for a couple of months now, but I wanted to make sure that everything I had was cemented in the proper way. I had the great, a good brand, good name, and I was able to scale out from there. So this is definitely a lot of good information for sure.
Sweet. Well, when it comes out, make sure you send me the links and everything. We'll be happy to share it with our network and promote it as well. And but appreciate everything you're doing. This is fantastic.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I'll definitely send that over to you. Yeah, appreciate you coming on the show. I'll send that over and I hope you have a fantastic day.
You too, man. Take it easy.
All right, you as well. Take
Cheers.
care.
Bye.